Hello, and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Medical Center in Edison. I'm Raquel Williams. Well, much of the country has been on quarantine, working from home, going out only for essentials. Non-essential businesses, of course, shut down. Doctor's appointments even delayed. Kids are learning from home. It's our new normal. But there has to be a light at the end of this very dark tunnel. And there are lots of looming questions about our current state and where we go from here and how fast we get there. But where you get your information matters. Joining us today is Dr. John Sensikovic. He is Director of Infection Control with Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Medical Center in Edison. Dr. Sensikovic, thanks for joining us today.
You're quite welcome.
Okay, so COVID-19, do we know all there is to know about COVID-19, or are experts still learning?
Certainly, we're still learning. We've gathered a lot of very good information rather quickly since this outbreak began, but there always is more information to be gathered and more work to be done for possible treatment and prevention.
I think it's the unknown that really scares people, doctor, and we usually look to experts to tell us A, B, and C, but when there's gray areas, you know, we get a little anxious knowing that the experts aren't even completely sure about what we're dealing with, because this is new. It's the novel coronavirus, correct?
It is correct. It is a new virus in the coronavirus group.
Now, as far as the coronavirus group, I'm understanding that this is a SARS or MERS. Can you explain exactly what this is and how this is a new form of the virus, but that this is something that's been around for a while?
Yes, coronaviruses have been around for ever and ever. There are currently 7 different types that have been identified. The one that's most common, there are actually 4 types, they cause the common cold. These are viruses that we've been experiencing for years and years and years. They account for about 1/3 of the common colds that people develop. They tend to be relatively mild, except in rare situations where there are complications. Unfortunately, there have been 3 other viruses that have appeared over recent years. One was the so-called SARS virus, severe acute respiratory syndrome, which really developed around 2003. And this was a virus that caused a severe pneumonia, similar to what happens with the coronavirus we're now seeing. That had about a 10% mortality rate associated with it. The virus was mainly seen in the Middle Eastern countries, but it died out over a period of time, and it's become rather rare. A second one, the so-called Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, MERS, developed in about 2012. And again, mainly in the Middle Eastern countries, very high mortality rate. But fortunately, this virus also tended to die out and be seen less and less. And now the 7th of these viruses, which is the 3rd of the severe ones, the so-called COVID virus, which was first recognized again in China in December of 2019, this is the virus that we are currently experiencing in a worldwide epidemic, a pandemic, actually.
Right. Okay. So let's get a little bit scientific about the virus, and maybe not so much where people won't be able to understand, but I know a lot of us have been researching and looking, trying to find answers, get as much information as we can about this virus. And from what I understand, in its very makeup, the virus is actually weak in its makeup. Is that correct?
The virus itself is weak. It really does not have a good protective capsule. It's very, very susceptible to disinfection and things like that. But when it gets into the human body and it attacks the human body, initially usually through the nose, gets into the system, it has the ability to attack the red blood cells, and it really distorts their ability to carry oxygen. And that's where the disease occurs because these people become very short of breath. They lack oxygen in their circulation, and that results in the severe disease that we're seeing. The other issue is we really are still experimenting with potential treatments. We do not have a well-proven treatment for this virus. Even though it's not a highly resistant virus, when it starts an infection in the body, we do not have a proven treatment that ultimately always works.
Okay. Let's talk about how our immune systems are dealing, is dealing with the coronavirus. Is this virus causing our immune system to go into overload and attack our own bodies, or is the virus itself causing the damage? I'm not really sure how this is working.
It really appears from all studies and information that the immune system does attack the virus. We do develop antibodies against the virus. And in point of fact, it appears the majority of people who get infected do recover because of that immune response from the body. Mm-hmm. The damage occurs when the virus attacks the body and the red blood cells. The patients then develop hypoxia, low oxygen in the body, and unless that is corrected, they do not survive. So it's very typical of many other viral infections that we endure. The body attacks the virus, but if it doesn't attack it quickly enough or sufficiently, that disease can progress. And again, we see most of the diseases you would imagine, the severe disease, in those people whose immune systems may be affected by other things, elderly patients, patients with many underlying conditions or diseases. These are the people who get the most severe disease because of the aging of their immune system or because of the pressure of other diseases that are pressing on the immune system, so it is not as effective in fighting off the virus.
Okay. Well, the makeup of the virus being weak, but the fact that it causes so much damage when it gets into the system is the whole reason why avoidance and preventing this virus from getting into your bodies. And from day one, we've been hearing, wash your hands, cover your mouth when you cough. I mean, just some very simple steps that we should have been taking anyway, but that we really need to take now in order to prevent this from getting into our systems. Very basic.
Yes, they are, and they're critically important. We certainly recognize when someone is sneezing and they're sick, they could be transmitting a disease. However, we also now have recognized you don't have to sneeze. Just breathing can also put the virus out into the atmosphere if you're infected and sick. So someone who's close to you can then breathe in that virus and get infected. We also know that when people are coughing, sneezing, the virus gets into the environment. And it can remain viable on surfaces for a significant period of time. Hard, shiny surfaces, that virus can sit there for hours. Someone comes along, touches it, touches their face, their nose, their eyes, they could then become infected. So this is a respiratory virus, but it's not just transmitted by coughing. It's also transmitted by contact with the virus and then in point self-inoculating yourself by touching your face, your nose, your eyes. So these are the things that we have to be extremely careful with. The 6-foot rule from someone is fine for the coughing, but that's not going to help you when you go back and touch the environment and then infect yourself. Wow. So these are the two things we're concerned with.
Okay. So, of course, here in New Jersey, whenever you go into a store right now, you have to have your face covered. And so we're starting to see in supermarkets the plexiglass that's up and everyone's wearing the face masks. People are even wearing gloves. These are the practices that are being used to help, lessen the transmission of the coronavirus. But just to hear that just breathing, just simply breathing can emit the virus into the air. So I guess these face masks are definitely something we have to adhere to.
Certainly the precautions we're taking. And again, we don't have good solid evidence with this virus, But certainly those precautions make sense. These are things that we do in the hospital when we're dealing with these patients. And now that they've carried over to the environment, everyday activities, hopefully it's helping. But again, we have to emphasize hand washing is also critically important. You know, people go into the supermarket and they wear the face mask, which is great. I think that gives some degree of protection. It's not 100%. Nothing is. And it depends on the type of mask. But they'll come out of the supermarket, take that mask off, and not wash their hands.
Right.
So they're spreading it in that regard as well.
Right, right. And wearing gloves. I mean, if you're touching everything with the gloves and then you go home and you have the gloves on and you're touching more things, I mean, I guess that really doesn't make a difference either if you're not discarding the gloves in between uses.
Properly taking them off and then washing your hands. And that's the thing that we're trying to emphasize.
Wow. What would you say, Doctor, that past pandemics have taught us about dealing with COVID-19?
Well, this virus is so unique in many different ways from what we're experiencing. I don't ever remember seeing an outbreak to this extent. But that said, we certainly know that from past viral infections that have occurred, somewhat similar, but perhaps not as severe. Again, identifying people who are infected so that they can take precautions to remain in isolation at home and not infect other people. The other issue is, as we have more and more testing available, we hopefully will be able to identify patients with very mild or no symptoms, because there's usually a big portion of the population with these infections that are mildly or asymptomatic, yet they can still be spreading the virus. So as we get in more information, we'll know how much of that is going on, and hopefully we'll be better able to prevent spreading. And another area with this that we continue to look at is how long these individuals continue to spread the virus. And we're getting more and more of that information because, you know, we were saying, okay, a week, 10 days, 2 weeks after you get infected. Now we have some studies looking at people who have infection may continue to spread the virus for 3 to 4 weeks. So as we get more of this information, we're in a better position to actually advise people what precautions they should take to help reduce the spread.
You're listening to JFK Spotlight on Health. I'm Raquel Williams, and we are joined today by Dr. John Sensikovic. He is Director of Infection Control with Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Medical Center in Edison. Wanted to talk with you more about this. So many questions. We'll try to get to as many as possible, of course, in our time here together. But, you know, bottom line is everyone just wants to be safe. You know, you're wearing the masks, you're wearing the gloves, we're self-isolating, we're staying away, you know, have social distancing going on. But from what I'm seeing, at first we thought that this was an issue only that affected people of advanced age. But we're seeing young people, we're seeing, you know, kids, we're seeing people of all ages and different backgrounds affected by COVID-19, almost like it doesn't really discriminate at all.
That is absolutely true. And that's part of that is related to, as we're getting more testing, we're actually seeing the true picture. When we first started testing, the tests were rather limited. We were testing in the hospitals, patients who were very, very ill. And this tends to be the older patient population. The severity of the disease seems to be directly related to age and underlying illness or conditions. Now that we're doing more testing, we're seeing that the virus is also affecting younger individuals as well. Fortunately, it appears that those younger patients without other comorbidities fare much better with this virus. And as we continue to increase our testing, it's very likely we'll see that there are patients who've been infected who who've had mild disease and didn't even recognize it as COVID. That's what I'm expecting to see as we continue to go forward. But that doesn't reduce the risk to the population that's older and has comorbidity. So we still have to be very careful about not contributing to the spread.
Speaking of not contributing to the spread, you know, there's a lot of many people that are pretty much about getting the economy back going, opening up the stores, trying to get back to life as usual. But, you know, there is also, you know, the thought of we can't go too fast. We can't, if we go and do this too fast and end our social distancing, then we can probably find ourselves right back here, you know, within weeks in a worse situation. Everyone wants to get back to normal, but how soon can that be?
Well, I wish I had the answer to that. Obviously, there's pressure in both directions. Mm-hmm. One is to control the spread of the virus. The second is to get the economy going again. I think in order to do that safely, we're going to have more information about the degree of infections, the number of people who are getting infected with mild or asymptomatic disease, and use that information to really decide how far this epidemic has gone and when it is safe to start to open the doors up to get back, to get the public back out. One of the issues is when you know people have had the virus and they now have immunity to it, they're not likely to get reinfected. They're not likely to spread the virus. There may be a way to start getting those people back into the world and to get things rolling again. But again, we've never been in this situation. So we really don't have all the answers. And right. We're going to try to do it, I think, as quickly as we can, but also as safely as we can.
I was going to ask you about the antibody tests. I know there was talk about developing those and have people who have, suspected of perhaps coming, you know, being in contact with the disease, asymptomatic. You take the test, you realize that you have it, and you have antibodies. Is this, would this be a good way to help treat patients that have COVID-19 by having the plasma and the blood of someone who has the antibodies for COVID-19?
Absolutely. The therapy is really two main avenues with a virus like this. One is drugs and medications that actually kill or prevent the growth of the virus. And that's being looked at with a number of medications that have been used for other viruses. The other issue for many, many diseases, it's used. People who have infection develop antibodies. Their blood, some people refer to that as then hyperimmune serum. There's a lot of antibody to that particular infection circulating in the blood of those individuals who have recovered, especially several weeks after the infection. One of the approaches is to have them donate that serum and use that serum to treat patients who have severe infection. It's so-called hyperimmune serum therapy. And some of that is going on now on an investigational basis.
Okay, so that's investigational. So we don't know how well that is, how effective that is currently.
At this point, we do not have enough information to determine it. Mm-hmm. But from past experience with similar processes, we do expect that it could be very effective.
Okay. What about the chance of a mutation? Is this something where we could see COVID-19 mutate into something that's not really responsive to any treatment that we may come up with? I really don't know how that works, but is this a disease that could actually mutate and become worse than it currently is?
Well, any virus can mutate, and some people have speculated that this may be a mutation from the MERS or the SARS virus, in point of fact. So that can happen. Okay. That certainly can happen. Again, if we have a disease treatment for this virus, there's a high degree of probability that it might also be effective against that mutational virus as well. But that's something that has to be followed, and that's something that has to be looked at as we go forward. Right now, the probability of that at this point is small because we have so much of the circulating virus at this point. But at some point in the future, that's always a possibility.
Okay. Now, of course, the race is on for a vaccine. Everyone's hoping that what we understand that whenever they come up with this, it would take at least a year or so with clinical trials and the like for a vaccine before a vaccine is even available. This is something that is the most promising way to fight COVID-19. And this is the one area that I guess people are waiting for. Is this going to be what is going to end this once and for all?
If we develop an effective vaccine and this virus is still a circulating problem in the communities, then the vaccine would be an answer to breaking that transmission train and the spread of the virus. That is absolutely true.
Okay.
However, you know, that is a year and a half away. Immunizations takes weeks for the antibody to develop. So we're talking about a treatment that's quite a distance away and would be effective if the virus continued to replicate in the environment. My hope is that we come up with an effective therapy before that, so that we can break the chain of spread and help to diminish this epidemic well before the development of the vaccine.
There's also been talk about a possible second wave, perhaps in the summertime when things have died down and we've seen, you know, a complete flattening of the curve and we're going back to work, going back to school, you know, getting our lives back to whatever normal was at this point, that a second wave in the fall or winter is actually possible. That's not something we want to hear, but I'm assuming that that's something that we need to look out for.
Absolutely. It is something we need to look out for. Right now, it's difficult to predict. We certainly expect that as in the other countries where this has been flourishing, it reaches a peak and then starts to decrease. We would expect this as a respiratory virus to start to decrease as we get into the spring and summer. The question then, does it come back next year? Part of the answer to that is how many people have been infected that we don't know about? How much immunity is going to be in the community before we get to next year? From mild infections, subclinical infections, we don't know that yet because we don't have enough testing. So if there is enough mild disease going around where most of or much of the population has antibody, we have something developed which we refer to as herd immunity. There's so much immunity in the population, the likelihood of another big outbreak is very small. On the other hand, if we are only seeing a small percentage of the infections, those people that are getting sick that we're testing, and the rest of the community has not been infected and is not immune, then absolutely we could see another breakout.
Okay. All right. So as far as advice for people who are adhering to, well, I guess that's the advice, adhere to the current measures that are being suggested to us by keeping our social distance, covering our face, washing our hands. You know, I heard someone use the term, get into your bubble and stay there. if we could all get into a bubble and stay there and not allow anyone else in. What's your advice going forward for prevention?
Well, I think to the extent that you can, yes, you want to get into the bubble. I mean, obviously, anyone who's symptomatic, whether you've had the test or not, you want to presume that this could be infection. You don't want to spread it to anyone, so you want to take those precautions. And you also certainly want to find out if you're positive or not, because if treatment is necessary, there are some therapies that are being used, even though they may have not been proven. On the other hand, the asymptomatic people, the people who do not have seem to have disease, you want to really keep yourself in a bubble as far as you can to reduce the chances of you getting exposed. But again, nothing is 100%. You know, you're with your family, you're with friends from time to time. You have to go out and food shop or go to the pharmacy. You have to make sure you take as much precaution as you can. And as I said, it's facial protection for breathing and hand wash.
Okay, we've been hearing it, and hopefully everyone's doing that. Dr. Stankovic, thank you so much for joining us today. So many questions about COVID-19. You've been able to shine some light on it, and hopefully people can grasp something from our talk and adhere it to their lives. And, you know, this too shall pass, hopefully sooner rather than later.
I agree. Thank you very much. I hope it was helpful, and stay safe.